Hello again and welcome back. Now, Mahmoud Abbas accused Israel of waging war of genocide in Gaza. He said Israel had committed war crimes during the seven-week conflict and warned that without a clear timeline for talks in place, there was little point in resuming peace talks. So, Professor Entsar, what Mahmoud Abbas is basically saying is that we have to set, a time frame in order to for the occupation to end. So, how realistic do you think such suggestions are?
The UN, the way the UN is structured, it would be not very realistic because ultimately the UN Security Council will have to give its consent to that, and we know that the at least one member, permanent member of the UN Security Council, the U.S., and perhaps two others, Britain and France, will veto such a proposal. So if we will not get out of, unfortunately, the way this world structure is shaped, it's not it's a dead end when you go through the Security Council.
Right.
So again, it's difficult again to do it through the UN.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. Now, Mr. Graber, let's have a look at the reactions to what Mahmoud Abbas actually said. Netanyahu responded on Monday to Mr. Abbas by calling the allegations, quote, shameless. And a U.S. State Department spokeswoman said Mr. Abbas's remarks were counterproductive and included offensive characterization of Israel. Your comments?
I think they have no other way but saying such, let's say, irrelevant remarks. You know, the world has watched that what was going on Gaza. Even a very simple student of international law knows that what was going on in Gaza, killing the people, genocide, war crimes, these were the things that all the international community has watched that was going in Gaza. So I think Israelis and unfortunately Americans that always trying to please them, always trying to back them illegitimately against the basic principles of international law. They try to justify the war crimes. I think Netanyahu, instead of being in the United Nations, in the General Assembly, he should be in a war crime court.
Yes.
He should be on trial. He should not be there and saying that, okay, these are only shameless allegations. These are not allegations. These were realities on the ground. We also saw that what was going on in Gaza. I think that the American officials, that they are backing the Israelis in these regards, especially, I mean, and the Israelis should be on trial, and they should be responsible under international law, international criminal law.
Netanyahu, who was once again holding a poster, because last time around he was also doing the same, holding a poster showing that a rocket being launched and then children in the background. So basically he was trying to say that, okay, we didn't have any other choice.
I think it's a shameless, let's say, remark from the side of Netanyahu. You know, in international law, when a country being attacked, the attacked country has the right to respond, but there are two or three, let's say, yardsticks that they should be observed. Number one is necessity. Number two is proportionality.
Right.
You know, you cannot, instead of launching two or three rockets, killing the people in Gaza over 7 weeks. Only receiving two or three rockets does not justify your position that killing the people, massacring the children, displacing tens of thousands of people only for the simple pretext of, okay, we have received two or three launches. So legally, under international law, his talks are not legal, and I think he's a criminal. And if we want to speak from the perspective of international law, he should be in an international criminal court, not in the UN.
So it should be in The Hague, not in...
In The Hague, yeah, because at the moment ICC's seat is in The Hague.
Okay, thank you very much indeed for that. Now, let's talk about another issue, and that's what basically President Rouhani and, of course, British Prime Minister David Cameron did. Professor Entsar, they actually held landmark talks on Wednesday last week, and These were actually the highest level talks between Britain and Iran since the 1979 revolution.
Yes, I mean, in that very limited sense, obviously it was a turning point. But you know, talks in and of themselves don't lead to a higher level of achievements. And unfortunately, the speech that Prime Minister Cameron delivered the next day after meeting with President Rouhani at the UN General Assembly did not indicate that the relations between Britain and Iran are going to be on a mend anytime soon. I mean, it was as an aggressive and hostile speech as one could expect under, you know, the circumstances. But nonetheless, you know, one would have at least hoped that after meeting with President Rouhani, he would have made some adjustments in his prepared text of his speech, and he didn't. He went and apparently read it verbatim from what he had written prior to meeting with Mr. Rouhani, and that's not going to be very helpful in, you know, in improving British-Iranian relations, despite the fact that the meeting itself could have been certainly a turning point, but I did, but the subsequent events threw some cold water on that turning point.
Right. So basically, you know, Professor, he mentioned that Iran and Britain had severe disagreements, and he also mentioned that Tehran is basically part of the problem. But to be exact, he said Iran should also be given the chance to show it can be part of the solution, not part of the problem. So these were the statements which caused lots of, you know, disappointments.
Yes, I mean, given a chance to be part of the solution, in what way? Given a chance to jump on the bandwagon of this coalition that has been put together, that's launching what looks like now, unfortunately, a sort of aimless, indiscriminate attack on Syria under the guise of attacking the Islamic State, Daesh, for example. You know, even yesterday, we had the reports that several of the targets that were initially reported as being Daesh targets, IS targets, were not IS targets and resulted in a number of deaths of innocent people. So I mean, it's given a chance. I'm not sure what Prime Minister Cameron meant by giving a chance. Giving a chance so they could, Iran could sit on the sideline and cheer bombing another country on the guise of fighting terrorism. If that is giving a chance, then probably Iran will not jump on that chance.
Right. Great. Thank you very much indeed. Let's take a short break. After the break, we'll be back with Dr. Rouhani's second meeting, which was also an important meeting. So please do stay with us. Hello again and welcome back. Now, Iranian President Hassan Rouhani also met French President Francis Hollande, and that was, Mr. Garavan, for a second time,
yes,
wasn't it? And I just want to basically read to you what Hollande said. Hollande told Rouhani that every support was required to find political solutions with regard to Lebanon, Syria and Iraq. So it seems that Iran's key role is finally and eventually being recognized.
Yeah, of course. You know, Iran's role has been even previously recognized. You know, this is not something new, I think. Mm-hmm. But the language that Rouhani uses in his speech in the UN, I think, to some extent, altered the view of the whole international community. Because over the past years, the Europeans and especially the Israeli regime, they tried to demonize Iran. They were always talking about Iran's threat.
Right.
And the people of the international community, they were always thinking that Iran is trying to produce nuclear bombs, and Iran is a warmongering country. So I think they have taken some lessons from the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. And I know they know that without Iran, it is really difficult to solve anything in the Middle East. Because if you see, for example, the U.S. tried not to pay attention to the role of Iran in Afghanistan and in Iraq. So at the moment, both of these countries are on the verge of collapse. So Iran is a basic and very key player in the Middle East, and I think no political crisis, at least, without the role of Iran would be solved.
Right. Thank you very much indeed. Now, Professor Anderson, let's talk about the meetings which were held on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly, the 69th UN General Assembly session. But then, actually, talking about the nuclear talks, there was a question put to, Dr. Rouhani, and when asked about the prospect of securing an agreement on Iran's nuclear activities, he said, of course, on U.S. television, that he believed the deal was within reach before a November 24th deadline. Do you share Iranian president's optimism?
Well, I wish I did, but from what, sitting here and looking at what has transpired and is transpiring, I don't see the prospect of reaching a mutually acceptable deal by the deadline that's approaching very fast. Granted, steps have been taken that have made it easier, certainly, towards reaching that elusive final agreement. But the indications are that still significant disagreements on everything from number of centrifuges to the type of enrichment. You know, these are things that have always been in the heart and center of the dispute between Iran and the U.S. generally are still there with us. And
but, the U.S. basically came with a compromise saying that, they basically reduced their expectations. They now are saying that Iran can have centrifuges in the lower thousands.
Yes, but we don't know what the number is and under what circumstances those centrifuges are going to be allowed to operate. Are they going to be just simply sitting there and spinning aimlessly, or are they going to be legitimate, centrifuges? We don't know all the details, but certainly, the steps have been taken. There's no question about it. Every day that we go on, there's some new. Hope is risen. Even Foreign Minister Lavrov of Russia said that 95% of the deal is already agreed upon, which is a very significant step. But as they say, the devil is in the details. What is left that hasn't been agreed upon?
So the sticking points are still there.
Yes, I think so.
Great. Thank you very much indeed. Now let's, Mr. Girvan, talk about Israeli Prime Minister's comments and basically what he said. Benjamin Netanyahu said defeating the radical group Islamic State but allowing Iran to move to the brink of nuclear weapons would be akin to losing the war against Islamic extremism. And, when we look at His style is as always, but it seems nobody's listening to him anymore. The fact of the matter was that when he was actually addressing the General Assembly, more than half of the seats were empty.
I think you are completely right, because, actions speak louder than words, as they say generally. Because, a country which is harbor of, let's say, terrorism, extremism and racism cannot speak in the language of logic, cannot speak in the language of realities, cannot speak in the language of law. And the international community, they all have their own logic and they all have their own judgments. They see that what is going on in the Middle East, what is going on in Gaza, and the record of the Israel towards the United Nations, toward the ICJ, the advisory opinion that ICJ issued against the wall, but the Israeli has disregarded all these, let's say, obligations, all these things that he or she should, let's say, observe them. So when it comes to Iran, it's quite clear that Iran has not recognized the country of Israel as a state. Okay, so this can be the root of a very big problem from one side. On the other side, Iran has some sort of, let's say, we can say spiritual support toward the oppressed people of Palestine.
Right.
And this has created a very, very big problem in the mind of Israelis. So when they see that there is no other problems, they try to bring Iran, let's say, into the field, that they say that, okay, Iranians are creating the problems. But, you know, there isn't, let's say, an obvious and solid evidence for the, behind the remarks of Mr. Netanyahu, and that's why these days, most of the, especially analysts, say that he's talking aimlessly and for no good reason. The only listeners are Americans, and that's because of the, let's say, covert relations between U.S. and Israel.
You know, the thing is that it can basically predict what he's going to say.
Of course it is. Because, because you know, Israel is trying always to, trying to find an enemy. Because he wants to justify.
Right.
If he wants to say that, for example, we are killing the people in Gaza, he should say that we are responding. We are not starting the war. Okay.
Yes.
So there is no big power except Iran. There is no big power in the Middle East that is standing in the face of it. Of course, an illusory, let's say, enemy for them, because Iranians have not, let's say, waged any war in the Middle East, in the world.
Right.
All we have been victimized during, let's say, two or three decades ago, by wars in the Middle East, that some of these wars, you know, they have been instigated by the world powers and sometimes by the Zionists.
Right. Thank you very much indeed. Now let's take a short break. After the break, it's time for Center Stage Online Search.